Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney. You're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Hi, welcome to this week's FX Podcast. I'm John Montgomery. Thanks for downloading our podcast this week. We've got a really interesting one for you. We're going to be taking a look at the workflow for the feature film Zodiac. Now, Zodiac was directed by David Fincher, and he was really a driving force into shooting a film that was done entirely in data without videotape. So kind of spent the last several years developing and working on that process and really used that effectively to create these films Zodiac. To that end, we're going to be talking this week with two people. The first is Angus Wall, who's the editor on the project, and he's been an editor for Fincher in the past, working on Panic Room. He's also done quite a few music videos as well. He's also the owner of Rock, Paper, Scissors and A52 in L.A. We're also talking with Andreas Wacker, who has been a friend of FX Guide for a long time, really smart guy. Used to be part of Method Studios, where he really headed up the technical department, and is now doing a freelance tech consulting and so forth, and he helped develop the workflow used in the film Zodiac. Now, that workflow, just to explain, revolves around acquisition using the Viper Filmstream camera. And on set, that data is recorded in HD resolution at 444 10-bit directly to hard drives. The data is then taken back and archived and also converted into DVC Pro HD QuickTimes, where Angus could edit those in Final Cut Studio. So let's go ahead and join the conversation that Jeff Huser had this week with both Angus Wall and Andreas Wacker. Jeff?
Thanks, John. Okay, we're here at Rock, Paper, Scissors with Andreas Wacker and Angus Wall. We're going to talk about the movie Zodiac. From my standpoint, this is an exciting movie because I love looking at problems with new technology. And this is an existing, you know, the traditional movie workflow, but how do we apply technology to it? And Andreas, you were very involved with that. Can you take us through Zodiac, what it is, and the approach?
Zodiac is a movie that will come out, I think, in the end of the year, that Rock, Paper, Scissors took on the entire editorial and the principal of the company and main editor of the movie. Angus can maybe say a little bit better how the movie got started and what the involvement was.
Well, basically, we had a pre-production meeting. We were talking about how we were going to, what the workflow was going to be, because it was something brand new. It's basically, it's digital photography. There's no film. The camera's been worked out, and in this case, it was ViperCam, which David has shot for 3 or 4 years now. The capture device had been worked out, which was S2, but nobody really had a good plan for dailies. And for me, as the editor, it was really important to get dailies on time and to kind of control the workflow of that. So when David posed the question, how are we going to deal with dailies, I completely naively stuck my hand up and said, well, we have to think of it like a 21-year-old Swedish film student and do it as cheaply and efficiently as possible. And little did I know that I was wrong about the 21-year-old Swedish film student. It was actually a 30-something suit-wearing German engineer, which is Andreas.
Excellent. Yeah, thanks very much for shaving 5 years off my age.
You mean with the project? Or?
Yeah. No, that actually moved 5 years forward. I think I got the first gray hair on the project, which now that we sit here, it did work, which is great, and we're very happy about that. But when we approached it, we couldn't know whether it would be working or not because it was something that was completely new and completely different from other workflows. As Angus said, Viper was a known factor. It was 444. Its resolution of 1920 to 1080 was something that was perceived as being good. And then with S2, we had already the images in the data domain of being DPX files 444. But then from there on, there were many possible ways. And the problem that was somewhat new to me, because I have worked in post for a long time, and now in the world of production, the problem is that the shoot is going every day. A certain amount of material has been processed and or being created, and that also needs to be processed. You cannot become the bottleneck in this whole machinery of doing what then will be the editing, but there's many steps in between. So this was a new challenge and a new pace to come up with something that would work reliably enough and would also scale well enough with a shoot that had not been perceive or that had not been done like this before. With shooting digital, out of a sudden a new paradigm comes in the matter of volume. People can shoot for longer times. There can be much more material than it used to be just from having three cameras going at a long time. And these were things that we kind of anticipated, but then only when the movie was going saw the real volume of that.
So let me just compare this to film. So in the film world, you'd shoot film, you'd have it processed, you'd have dailies made, and you'd get delivered dailies taped for the Avid. You now need to replace that entire workflow with S2s coming back with hard drives in them, with data on them, that I assume then first thing needs to happen is protect it, back it up, get it off of those portable units onto some server.
Right.
Let me just back up a little bit. Part of the discussion that we had in pre-production with David was he never wanted to go to tape, because going to tape does compress your image quality. So that was a prerequisite for our workflow. And I think in terms of efficiencies, it's obvious to me that doing pure data is so much more efficient, saves so much money, time. I'm so done with tape. Any kind of native format that you have to buy $125,000 tape deck for.
Right. Worst case scenario, you want to buy one just to have the output capability, but that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Movies have been done digitally before, and all done digitally, but Zodiac is, I think, the first major Hollywood studio that is not going to tape as this intermediate format. So it hasn't have any linear aspect. And as linear workflows and real-time operations have their certain advantages, but they also scale horrible. They basically are what they are. And in the Zodiac workflow, we realized with changing volumes that we needed to scale certain aspects, but we could do so very quickly because it was not a second HDCam SR deck that we needed to roll in. It was just little pieces in the whole pipeline that we need to boost. And that is something that when we think about different resolutions, for instance, those non-tape-based workflows can go that way. You can scale hard drives to have more bandwidth. You can scale computers to have more processing power. And that is not possible. You're locked into what the device can do, and that it does very well and very predictable, but not more. And that is something that in the future, I think, will show that the tape-based approaches are a good solution for now, but in a couple of years they will probably have been outperformed. But let me answer your question of the detail. So what happened is that we got these so-called DMACs with the material, which is a couple of hard drives just in one set from the set, and made two redundant LTO3 copies of that, just because we needed at some point to have the movie in what used to be the negative. It used to be that the negative was the movie, and now we need the digital equivalent of that in order to protect the asset of the shoot, of all the precious money that went into the creation of this. Hence the redundant copy. One of the tapes was instantly leaving the building. The other one we then verified against the working copy of the material to make very sure that we really had on the tape what we needed. To make very sure that we really had what was on the tape is the anti-movie, because in the analog world, if you have a defect or a scratch, it's very annoying. It happens quite a bit. It's all the time, actually, there. But it can be also fixed. If you have the digital scratch, it could mean that your tape device has not recorded anything, or it has recorded something that you cannot recover, or you have not changed the tape in a week, and so you recorded the same thing over and over. It didn't happen on this movie, but in digital, you can have these total losses that are horrifying. And
Binary existence,
yeah. And there's zero movies, and that's hence the gray hair. And that made these levels of redundancy very important in this procedures that also needed to be developed, because there was not that much of a existing workflow in there to have these procedures there. And that's where, not only there, but this was also where having a good team on the movie, having great assistance that came over from Rock, Paper, Scissors, was crucial in the success of the whole project. That the team was there and was working on this amazing quality that you can rely on them.
They did what normal assistants do, plus the job of the lab, plus the job of conforming. You know, usually you have three people with bed cutting benches in a big room full of film conforming the movie. This was done, and I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but this was done by one guy with, you know, a tape robot and a bit of code.
Hmm.
Kind of amazing.
Yeah, that's great. So you now have everything backed up. Your negative, quote-unquote, is backed up on these LTO drives, and on-site, off-site, you've got all that protected, and your data is on the server.
Right.
So now you can start spinning out. Do you deliver stuff directly from the server to the Final Cut system?
Well, we needed the 444 uncompressed data. We would never have had the storage to keep it all, so we need to convert it instantly into our working resolution for the movie was DVC Pro HD 100, and that was a good choice, I think, because the quality that we got out of that was helping then for many things. After we did that, we also derived an even smaller version for online dailies that we worked together with the PIX system. PIX is an online review system that where everybody can watch the dailies just in the web browser. It makes security and access and all that very nice for the people being involved. And that worked very well for us. It also stayed, everything remained in the digital domain. Once in a while, we made DVDs for people that wanted to have it like that. It's, you have to please, you can't force everybody in a certain workflow, there are certain expectations and things, so we had to linearize it, quote-unquote, certain deliverables, but for our own production, we made that mostly. We also, in that moment, applied the color correction. When we did the correction to the DVC Pro HD, we applied a color correction that we came up with, which was one of the R&D things that we did before the shoot, because what we have in the DPX files is negative, and while that looks with the Viper pretty good, we wanted to have a look, or a couple of looks indeed, to apply to the material to have always something, a beautiful picture to work with.
Yeah, there's always a learning curve for people because I think for a studio exec, for example, who's used to seeing color corrected film dailies, to see raw Viper is
a problem.
Well, it raises a lot of questions like, is that what it's supposed to look like? Is, you know,
right.
What am I looking at? So part of the thing that we did before the show started was generate a bunch of LUTs, which remarkably, I think we generated 9 initially, but they were reduced to 1. So the majority of the footage in the rough cut was actually had 1 color correction, one global color correction on everything, which is a real testament to David and Harris, the DP. It's also great because it... having that one baseline color correction tells you exactly what you have on the neck. I think for the next one, we probably won't bake in any color correction. We'll probably go with the raw because everybody's sort of up to speed with, they understand what they're looking at. It's a raw digital negative, and they're used to looking at it at this point.
And the way this came about is actually something that we saw on the project in a couple of areas that we were thinking about the need, in this case, color correction, came up with a solution. It was actually even more elaborate than just having the 9 lookup tables before, because we were thinking at some point, well, wouldn't it be nice if the DP could create lookup tables? Yet, giving him a full color correction suite is not really feasible, so we developed some software in order for him to get a one-dimensional lookup table or look set in Photoshop or whatever tool, and then for him to give a reference image through these Photoshop settings that then he could just put on a little droplet and that would upload a 1D generated lookup table into our system that then would become available. It was a very nice engineering project. It was fun to make that work, had lots of little aspects of like the whole internet dimension to that. It worked, we never used it. And that's something that is great because you come up with these ideas, you put them out there, and then they have to work in the reality of the shoot. And that's something that where there's so many factors and so many things where you have to make these offers, but you have to be prepared that they will not, that are not feasible, that they're not, basically that they make no sense in the reality, and still be able to go with without forcing people to use the 9 LUTs, for instance. And if 1 LUT is better, then that you have the flexibility to change the whole thing as you go.
Or no LUT.
Yeah,
that's kind of, to me, that's the miracle, because we're slaves to this old way of thinking about it. and which is, okay, you get your raw neg, you color correct it. But what if you're just looking at raw neg?
Right.
I mean, that's, and you have a display LUT where you don't have to even deal with any kind of setting.
Right.
It's all in play all the time.
What's
interesting is everything is being developed as you go.
Keep, right.
That's, to me, that's, and I think to hear David talk about it too, those are the things that are so exciting about a purely digital workflow. Because mm-hmm. you don't have to lock in anything. You don't have to have your color correction department, your conform department, your editing department. All those things can work concurrently.
Right. Right.
Which is, as a filmmaker, is amazing to be able to do all those things. You go, well, what if this whole scene's yellow? You sit there and you have your Final Cut suite and you figure out a way that you can make everything yellow. You see the emotional impact of that.
Hmm. So was DI involved earlier in the project than normally would be? Was the colorist involved earlier?
No. Price Pethla actually came in and did a temp color correction for our temp screening. And that was kind of interesting because that was – he basically plugged into the setup that we had. Sucked the files off of the sand and color corrected them and – We ran them back through Final Cut, and we basically our screening was a Final Cut output, which was kind of great.
Yeah,
but that now we jump ahead to the online.
Yeah,
but, that's true. What is the end of between? So that's fine because we had the editorial process, and then in the end we needed to make a movie again out of it. And once we had the DVC Pro material, we deleted the 444 originals because we had the backup copies, and on the back end of when we started to do screenings, we had to make a movie again and make it online. And with the digital approach, we could think of that, well, how about we take the XML Final Cut, and then we generate a kind of, we drive the tape robot asking us for the tapes to put in, which had barcodes. And so what happened then was a fully automatic online process that was working on those couple of Final Cut stations that we had on one 40 terabyte XSAN that was making the online in a little Perl script, which was fun to develop. It worked nicely integrated into the Scalar robot. And what it allowed us to do is to do onlines on the go or in the background all the time. And when we had Price come over with his eReader system, it has a certain naming conventions for the clips and so on. Since we generated the system, it was very easy to make the data in a way that his system would expect it. And if there would be another system involved or anything, that's very easy to plug in, to build into this thing. So it used to be that on a movie, the negative cut was a big deal, and all these things were like a big commotion. Even if you go with an HDKMSR workflow, you still have to put the tape back in and have to drive all this thing. And in the pure digital workflow at this stage, it really becomes a no-brainer. It's very, very simple to make these things and make like three different onlines a day. The machine just sits there and reassembles things. So that's when, out of a sudden, you get to harvest all the other work that you have to put in having the data workflow, that you have this flexibility. And with somebody, a director like David Fincher, he kind of understands and knows these things in the beginning. He is able to set things up and say, no, let's not go to film, let's not go even to tape, let's go to data, because that means in the end we will have these capabilities. And that's a certain amount of perspective that you have to have to in order to see these things and to then expect them and see the benefit on that in the end.
Our success was really predicated on his embrace of all things future, I think, which is, he's always like that. It's amazing to me. He really grasps things much faster than your average human.
He grasps things faster than I did, and I was doing them, and then in the end I realized he had me tricked into doing certain things that then would lead into these systems that actually did work in a very new way.
when I was reading up on the articles about the movie, one of my favorite quotes of his was about the studios being concerned about how does this digital negative get back from the set. And he made the comment, well, it's the same underpaid PA that carries your unexposed negative to a lab in the middle of the night after working all day.
Totally.
They're just going to a different place. Right. And I love that perspective.
Yeah.
So how did was the film eventually, did it go to DI? Did you end up having to basically deliver?
It's in DI now.
It is in DI now.
Yeah, it's David loves working with Stefan Nakamura at TDI. Okay. And that's where they're doing it. Hmm.
So you had to deliver basically the entire movie as files then?
Yes.
Yeah. The movie being in files has then for visual effects also a very big impact, I think. Then in the past, movies were an analog thing, and your visual effects work had to pick out the data in the scan process. You were basically creating this parallel thing, and you were then needed to merge back into the analog world and kept your fingers crossed that it would work out fine. And of course, recording and scanning technology has become much better over the years, but it used to be this very troublesome getting on your own little digital path into files that make sense and then going back and hoping to match in the analog world. And now with something like Zodiac, it's not even flipped. It just is not existent anymore. The native format is data. It's always data. Right. Everybody can read. Everybody gets the same copy of the negative. Every visual effects house gets the original DPX files from that have been created on the set. Everybody has that and knows to go back to that, and it will be easy, fine. Of course, there's always details and things that you still can manipulate in the wrong way, but it's possible to go back to that, and it's a very binary thing in that matter, and that helps tremendously for many, many things. And then in the end, the migration into film is something that for the film prints is something that is not that's the whole movie is concerned to that. The whole movie needs to go that way, not only your visual effects shots. So it all goes through that same thing. And that's a problem that pretty much is solved very well, as we see in all these DI movies these days that look gorgeous, that just look better than all films that have been in a lab. And the other almost halfway related thing is this is a movie and there was no lab involved. And I suffered enough from labs in my past that I have no problem substituting that part and not giving them the business anymore. I mean, if they would have done an amazing job, I would have tried here, but most of the things that the labs added was just inconsistency, trouble, scratches. It's like, I'm happy that they're gone.
Right. Well, I'm from my standpoint as a visual effects artist, I'm always amazed about the level of finesse that we're worried about on a monitor that, you know, once it hits that analog world,
right.
Yeah. The variances can be a temperature degree, can make a huge difference, and
right.
It's always quite frightening. So, I mean, I'm excited. For me, this movie, the process, I mean, you start thinking about it, the mind starts reeling. It's like, okay, so there is no real key code because it doesn't really exist. I mean, right. There's no such thing. There's no, right. It doesn't need to exist.
Yeah.
You just need to solve the problem differently.
Right.
It becomes a huge data management issue. And I start looking at this even longer term. I mean, for years, I've been saying that I can't believe that video, that television commercial production, for example, has not evolved. I mean, we go to Telecine and throw away all this data before we do anything else. So we take this beautiful film, we throw it away, get it down to 1 megabyte of frame instead of whatever it is in the original format, you know. And it's been that way because that's the way we had to do it in the 70s when it was invented.
Right.
We never re-examine the process. We just build D2 decks, D1 decks. We just build different tape formats and still keep the process the same. So hopefully this type of thing really, you know, 10 years from now we're going to look back at this podcast and go, wait, we used to do it differently?
Yeah.
I mean, this is really the way it is.
Yeah. Well, now it's time for the commercial industry to leapfrog to me. I mean, they've avoided the HD issue so far. So
Right. Now
it's time to really jump in.
Right.
Yeah.
This is great.
It's interesting because when you talk about the labs, because initially when we walked out of that initial meeting, I was there with a fantastic video engineer named Joe Walcott, and we went out and we tried to find different vendors that would help us solve this problem. And people were like, yeah, we'd love to help you. We'd love to help you. And then we'd call back 2 weeks later and, I think we're probably not right for that, or we haven't gotten to it yet, or whatever. So it's interesting. I mean, I think this is, Andreas at one point said, you know, this is probably, from the outside point of view, this is the most unsexy part of the whole thing. But from the inside point of view, it's super sexy. Which is, I really agree. It just opens up so many things.
Mm-hmm. But I also love the philosophy that you had about using, you know, off-the-shelf drives, off-the-shelf technology, and as much as possible, the cheaper technology, the filmmaker approach. I love that concept.
Well, you open it. If you have the, if you are a step 100% in the data range, then you can look at these things and can say, okay, I have a file that needs to be processed in a certain amount of time, and what can do it? And when we ran out of power on our render farm, for instance, we just bought Mac Minis because they did the best performance, best bang for the buck for the task involved. Are they the perfect solution for everything? Of course not. But in this specific case, in order to crunch lots of files from way A to way B, that happened to be the best. And the actual numbers being calculated don't mind if they are calculated by a $500 worth of equipment compared to a $1,000. And that's a mentality and a thing that is possible with digital. But in other existing or older style technologies, it was always the expensive tape deck that had the right knobs and the right thing, and that was the pro thing. And that there is a reason for that. But with digital, you can look at that very neutrally and say, no, it's like, take the cheapest, the simplest solution, really apply Occam's razor there, and say, well, if it's very simple, it's very straightforward, let's try that first. And having the liberty, once you're entirely in data, you have the liberty to approach all these things. You don't have to comply to one real-time device here or there, and or to some film lab workflow or filling a can of something at some point in an environment. So that's...
My hope is that this sort of workflow continues to be approached holistically. My concern about it is that people will apply the old way of thinking where you have a conform, and that happens over here. You have dailies, and that happens over here. You have editing, and that happens over here. To me, the really exciting thing is that you have one place where all these things happen. It's residing in one environment, and you have very good communication, a very small crew, which we did on Zodiac, that works extremely efficiently.
Having that, for instance, to go back to the PIX system, having this system working in this one place doesn't mean that you make your little island and you don't let anybody look at that. On the other side, it's by nature open. We had a web interface to everything in order to manage the script nodes and all, because we did want to keep all the information from the set very close to the actual material. We needed to manage the material, so a database was a natural follow-up of that, and giving a web interface to a database is just the easiest way to manage that. That we did for our internal purposes. With the PIX system, we gave them the images, we gave them the same shot and take information, but they felt it would be nice for them to have also the script notes attached to that. And what they ended up doing was more or less not even telling us, of course they had access to this password protected site, that they started scraping the web page. And that's these days very nice possibilities open up by us using standards, by us using something like a web page to convey information that other people just can plug in, just can write another interface that we never had anticipated. There was never a big meeting and setting standards to interchange this and that, and we didn't go with some XML SMT format. There was simply no time on the show to do all these things. But by having standards and having on the other side somebody who was also very interested in making things work, all of a sudden we had a new bridge of data flowing in the right way. It saved a lot of work. It was nice, and what I like about that little aspect is that nobody had the time or the interest to think before of that, but then it became a possibility. And that's something you have with the digital workflow, and that's where there's lots and lots of things, as you said, where once people go out of the telecine world and forget the tape thing, where television production and commercial production will have many, many more possibilities in the way they work and the way the data is been available in post, what kind of data, is it the full film and it, or the full range. There's much, much more that will have to change, but it will also take years for all these little things to fall into place.
Yep. Yeah, but it really is the beginning of, you know, they talk about Web 2.0. This is really the beginning, the start of production 2.0. It's a new way. We need to start moving this direction, thinking freshly on each project about what the best way to do it is, and how to approach it, and how to mine that data. And really, that's what we're dealing with now. It's just the huge amounts of data that need to be intelligently shared and passed around, and it's great.
Yeah. And then it can be very nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. I think
it's truly only the beginning.
Yeah, and then a fun one too.
Yeah.
Well, thanks guys for taking the time to talk with us this week. I think that was really, really fascinating to hear some of the behind the scenes tech details of what it was like to work on a production pipeline such as that. I think this type of production pipeline has become even more prevalent in the coming months and years. And it's always good to hear the kind of insight about what actually went on during a production like that. Well, that's about all the time we have for this week. We appreciate you taking the time to drop by FX Guide and download the podcast. For Jeff Huser and Mike Seymour, I'm John Montgomery. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this week's FX Podcast. Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2006 FX Guide, LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the express written consent of FX Guide, LLC.